The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
I am with our very special guest that we have been talking about for several days now. And once again, it seems to me that we're going to sit down with Jim Bullard, president of the St. Louis Fed, at a couple of propitious times. I mean, it's not only the Homer Jones Memorial Lecture, which is a very important part of the history and present of the St. Louis Fed. It's also, as Vonnie pointed out at the top of the show, this is the 100th year anniversary of the setting up of the regional Fed banks. This is the centennial year for the Fed. It's been 100 years. And this is, for many people, one of the important things was included when the Federal Reserve was set up to have these regional banks to bring a national focus on the economy and the needs of policy here as well. Of course, he also received a very special award last night from the city for his contributions as a community leader. So, Jim, congratulations, and I want to make it you won the Weidenbaum Center Award for Excellence from Washington University. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for being here. It is a great day for the Homer Jones Lecture, the 100th anniversary of the Fed, the 25th anniversary of the Homer Jones Lecture, 250th anniversary of the city of St. Louis. So there's a lot to celebrate today.
And there's one more thing, looking forward to it. Your own anniversary, Fed President, yesterday celebrating 6 years as Fed President.
That's true as well. So we got a lot going on.
You know, it's funny too, Jim, because you know I did your first interview for Bloomberg Television when you became Fed president, and then to me one of the most key interviews we've done was after the first quantitative easing was announced, and it was when the NABE, National Association for Business Economics, were here in town, and I remember you said in our conversation some words to the effect that the Fed needed to look at the parameters for quantitative easing. What would sort of the model be for this? Everyone knows the Taylor rule and how the Fed operated, yeah. But all of a sudden there's this new world. And you said at the time, you know, because it might not be the last one. Now, it seemed to me that you were the one who brought this up at the Fed first, and your colleagues didn't exactly jump right on the bandwagon. But, you know, you've really proven to be a leader on policy in so many ways, and that one certainly proved prescient.
Well, I appreciate your recalling that one because I was right on that. The QE programs that we initially embarked upon were fixed amounts for fixed periods of time, as if the economy was going to, you know, definitely cooperate during that particular period. Our experience was that the aftermath of the recession was more severe than we probably initially estimated, and we had to come back in with more programs. By the time we got to QE3, I had managed to convince enough people on the committee that we should do a flow-based method that was state contingent, depends on the performance of the economy, and so I think that's been a better program than the first two, where we just cut them off after basically on a calendar date.
You've also, seems to me, one of the other, you know, banners you've been carrying is inflation, and that you can't just look at the upside for inflation, that there's a downside for inflation and the need to have some sort of range. And last summer, you dissented when you were a voter on the statement because you said the committee wasn't paying enough attention to inflation. Now you're not a voter. Your colleague, however, Nairana Kocher-Lakota from Minneapolis, did dissent. In essence, he's saying, look, we've got low inflation. It's not meeting the target. In fact, it's moving away from the target. How can we be talking about changing forward guidance or giving these signals about continuing to taper and maybe raising the key rate? If you were at the meeting last week, would you potentially, and as a voter, you were at the meeting, pardon me, would you also have dissented? Do you agree that the FOMC is ignoring something important?
No, at this particular meeting, I would have supported the committee. I thought we had a good statement there. I thought we did a good job. We had to do something about the thresholds. These thresholds, and just to remind your listeners, you know, we had a 2.5% inflation threshold and a 6.5% unemployment threshold. And I think, you know, one of the main things to keep in mind is that these thresholds have worked very well during the period that we've had them. And we knew that at some point one of the thresholds would be passed through, and that at that point we would have to decide what to do next. And we're very close to that on the unemployment rate. We'll see what rate we get tomorrow on the jobs report. But we're very close to it, so I think it was time to make a change. I think we're much closer to normal monetary policy than we were in the last several years. And for that reason, I think it makes sense for the committee to transition to more normal language in the statement and to say goodbye to the thresholds, even though they've done a good job for us while we've had them.
What about the inflation threshold? Is that one that may also go by the wayside? It's far below target. If the Fed forecast, the FOMC forecast for PCE and core hold, you won't have met on average that forecast for 8 years. What are we supposed to get from the inflation?
I don't get that. We got 2011. We had too much inflation in the U.S. in 2011. It was about 2.9%.
Then let's just look at the future. You're below. You're not going towards
the
target.
You're going to just do core? You can't just do core with me. You got to do headline.
Okay, how about headline?
Okay, well, 2011, we had 2.9%
inflation.
Where
are we now? Where are we going?
Well, we're low, but, I mean, sometimes we're on the low side, sometimes we're on the high side. I think what's been interesting and maybe and puzzling about inflation is that as of January 2012, core inflation year over year, PCE, was right at 2%. Headline was above 2%. Since then, it's been drifting down, but I think it's stabilized at a low level. I think it's about to head higher.
Big meeting continues to resonate. The last Fed meeting, Jim, as you know, in the markets, and a lot of it does have to do with understanding where the Fed is going on policy, particularly when the first interest rate increase may come. And it looking at forecasts and getting a sense from people like you of where you see the economy going. You just said you see inflation moving higher. Inflation is below target, and I know there's a lot of measures to look at, but you look at PCE, you look at core PCE. It seems to be the lagging, the number the Fed watches that isn't moving in the right direction. Why do you see inflation moving higher?
Well, I admit that inflation has surprised me to the low side. I would have thought in January of 2012 when inflation was at target on PCE core and was above target on PCE headline year over year that at that point that we wouldn't really see much lower inflation than that going forward because we have a very easy policy in place, and I would have expected the recovery to proceed at a good pace and that we would have not had a problem with inflation. But now that it has dropped down since that time, and this is 2 years now, that's pretty significant. I do think that inflation has stabilized at a lower level, and I do expect it to turn back up, but that's based on really the same models I would have used before, what my models are really doing is attributing the downdraft in inflation over the last 18 months to 2 years as a temporary phenomenon, and they're all predicting that inflation will go back to target. So I think that's what will happen. Inflation expectations are pretty stable, and that's a pretty powerful indicator of what will happen going forward. So we'll see. But I have been concerned about this in the past, but I do think inflation has probably stabilized at this lower level.
What exactly, St. Louis Fed President, what exactly do those models suggest will cause that inflation to get goosed? Because with all due respect, if they were wrong before, what would make them suddenly right?
I mean, yeah, and that's what's got me a little nervous. They have been wrong before. Now, I think one thing that you could say about the low inflation over the last 2 years is that Europe was in recession for much of that period. So there is a global factor that might be dragging down U.S. inflation, and that might be part of what was going on during this period. So that might have been a temporary factor. Now that Europe is in recovery mode, and we can talk about that more if you want, but now that they're doing better, you might expect inflation globally to pick up, and then the U.S. inflation numbers would go back to normal, back toward 2%. So that's what I'm projecting for this year. I've also got faster growth for this year, probably 3% growth for the entire year, despite what looks like it will come in as a relatively soft First quarter.
Jim, if your forecast, you said recently, in fact, 3% this year and even better than 3% next year.
Yep.
If that comes true, if that's what's happening, then, and tapering does end, say, autumn-ish, is it, would it be possible that the funds rate, would you be voting? Would you be saying it would be a good time to start raising the funds rate, say, after the first of the year? What would your sense be of that economic trajectory, stable and higher inflation, and when it's time to start raising the key rate?
Yeah, my dot on the funds rate is in the coming off zero is in the first quarter of 2015, and but you have to keep in mind that I'm one of the more optimistic people on the committee as far as the forecasts of output growth, and especially of inflation and improvement, or I'm sorry, especially of unemployment and improvement in labor markets is concerned. So I've got unemployment coming down all the way down to 6% or even below 6% in 2014. I've got inflation coming back up toward target, probably faster than many of the other members. And we've got faster growth, and because of that, we'd be in a good position, I think, in the first quarter of 2015. But that's ahead of most of the committee. I just want to be clear about that.
Even so, though, when you look at the FOMC forecast, the forecast is the funds rate will be moving higher. There's a broad range of dots, and that still is, even though inflation remains low. Yeah. And the GDP forecast didn't change. Why has the FOMC then en masse kind of shifted towards this somewhat quicker forecast broadly towards raising the funds rate?
You know, I don't know. You have to ask various members what their what's behind their forecasts and sort of piece it together. I just will put one thought out there for you. Unemployment is lower than we would have had it as of December of last year. So just remember, the last time we put out forecasts was December of 2013, and at that point, unemployment had come down to 7%, and that was a surprise that it had come down that far. You might recall Chairman Bernanke saying in the summer of 2013 that we wouldn't be to 7% unemployment until the summer of 2014. So we were way ahead of schedule on unemployment as of December of last year. I think at that point, some members might have said, you know, well, that might turn around and go back higher, tick back higher. You might get people coming off the sidelines and things like that, and unemployment might go back up. By the time we got to March of this year and we were redoing our forecasts, unemployment had come down again another 0.3 by that point. So everyone had to take that on board. I think that's just my basic message. And like I say, you got to ask other people what they had in mind.
Well, last week you mentioned a concern about bubbles in remarks in Hong Kong. Do you have an increased concern? Is there an increased concern broadly on the FOMC that the Fed could get behind in addressing either emerging inflationary pressures or emerging asset price bubbles, or even both?
Well, I think it's been an important concern. Jeremy Stein is one person on the Board of Governors that has been quite articulate in describing the policy risk associated with low interest rates and bubbles. Also, Esther George, my colleague in Kansas City, has been vocal on warning about imbalances in financial markets as we go forward. We did have the 2004 to 2006 period where we were tightening, but we did get a great housing bubble, and it really blew up on us. So this is going to be a big concern going forward.
You picked such an interesting time to become president, didn't you?
Yeah, it's been a fascinating time, one that might make you pull your hair out, but
you still
but
got a lot left, though.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, let's talk about something that maybe might give you a couple gray hairs, depending on how it goes, and that is what you just mentioned as we were going into that break. We were talking about bubbles, and you're concerned that maybe there some of those pressures are building. You mentioned Jeremy Stein has expressed the concern. Esther George from the Kansas City Fed has expressed the concern. How big of a concern? Where do you see it? Is it one of the drivers of policy right now?
I don't see anything on the order of the tech bubble of the 1990s or the housing bubble of the 2000s in the cards right now. I think our main risk going forward is that a bubble will form as we're trying to exit from our extraordinarily easy policy. So it's obviously it's going to take a long time for that to occur, and it's going to be a long time before the economy would be back to normal monetary policy. And during that period, we could face some risk. So we'll see. We'll keep an eye on that going forward. I do think the Fed has much better systems in place to flag imbalances in financial markets, and that we're better at tracking. We're more aware of the kinds of things that can happen in financial markets than we would have been circa 2006 or 2007.
How about the employment report on Friday from this point of view? Not so much the forecast. It's supposed to be about 200,000 jobs and a little bit lower rate on the unemployment, but the sense that right now the Fed, there's a very high bar to tapering, that the Fed is pretty much on the taper track, and now the big question is, when do you raise the key rate, and watching the economy for those signs. At this point, do the jobs report matter to the pace of tapering? Could it change even if the jobs report got a lot stronger, or even for the timing of the interest rate increases?
Well, I think the tapering that we just started in December and it continued for three meetings now has actually gone quite well for the committee. When you look at the events of last summer where there was a lot of market volatility, you might have thought that the ride would be somewhat rockier than it has been, but it's actually been quite a smooth process since we started in December, so I've been very pleased with that. I think that one of the lessons from last summer was that if the markets are very sensitive to the pace of purchases, and if the committee surprises markets either to the upside or downside, that has significant ramifications across the U.S. financial markets and globally. So for that reason, because it is such a potent tool, I think the committee would be reluctant to play that card to either speed up or slow down the pace of tapering. Unless we felt like the economy was definitely taking a turn away from where we had projected it to be. And so I think that's basically where we are in the tapering.
President Bullard, if you say we're going to have unemployment around 6% by year end, and we're going to see inflation goosed nicely, and there's going to be a first rate rise in the first quarter of next year, it would seem like we're on the cusp of a pretty nice rebound then. Do you anticipate all of the economic data turning up? What will lead us out of this sort of stable condition that we're in?
Yeah, I do project that it will be a good year for the U.S. economy. I do think there are many factors that are, you know, reasons to be bullish. I've talked about them many times before. I think the tech sector is in good shape in the U.S. economy. I think energy is a bullish factor. I think financially we're better off than many of our rivals globally. So I do think we have many good things to look at. And I also think that many of the factors that we've worried about over the last two or three years that were growth inhibitors are now dissipating. I think the deleveraging cycle is nearing an end, or maybe has already ended. I do think that the political wrangling in Washington has dissipated for at least for this year. So I think that Europe has come out of recession. So I think many of the drag factors that we've been so concerned about are dissipating. And that will get us to 3% growth, which still is not a huge growth rate, but it's going to feel good compared to where we've been.
You know, I've got a question from a listener. We do get emails and tweets throughout the show. Very interested in the dots, because we know the dots, the median for the Federal Open Market Committee is 1% on the funds rate at the end of 2015, and at 2.25 by the end of 2016. You mentioned your first dot.
Yes.
Where are you in that range of dots from end 2015 to 2016? Where are your dots?
Let me just talk about 2016, because this has been an issue for the committee. My view is once the output gap is closed and once inflation is back at target, I would expect the policy rate to be back at a normal level, like 4% or 4.25%. And so that's where my dot is for 2016, because I've got the gaps being closed at that point. Others may not have the gaps being closed completely, or they may have other factors in mind, and you have to ask them, you know, where they're coming
so
from.
So your DOT's 2.25 in 2016?
No, 4%.
Oh, 4% in 2016.
Right. So because I've got the economy performing normally at that point, and so I think policy should be normal at that point.
I wonder what Homer Jones would say about DOTs. You know, DOTs, I'm waiting, maybe there'll be a Saturday Night Live skit on DOTs one of these days, Jim. But
he liked data.
Well, there you see. So maybe he'd think it was pretty cool, or maybe he'd be guessing which DOT you were, too. But do you think the DOT plot is a good guide to the current projection for interest rate policy or not?
I think it gives you some indication, but it does have to be interpreted carefully because it's different members are giving different forecasts of what they think is going to happen in the economy, and therefore different dates at which they think the policy rate would lift off zero. And if you're more, those that are more pessimistic about the economy think that the recovery is going to be slower, you know, they're going to tend to push back the date, and then others are going to tend to pull it forward. And then on top of that, you've got the so-called, quote, appropriate monetary policy assumption, which might differ for different members of the committee. And so combining the fact that different members might have different forecasts, plus they might have different ideas about what an optimal monetary policy looks like, you know, makes it a little bit tricky to interpret. But in a general sense, I think it does give a general picture. Chair Yellen emphasized that when the committee is making statements that come right out of the policy meeting, those are things that the committee has agreed on as a group and voted on. And so I think, you know, it's better to go off the policy statement, generally speaking, than to go off the DOTS picture.
President Bullard, you seem to be expecting quite the pickup in inflation, particularly headline inflation. Could you somehow square this with a big move that we're seeing out of inflation-linked ETFs? There was a big build-up in bets on inflation, particularly in March, and now suddenly the largest ETFs investing related to inflation are seeing huge withdrawals. Square that. Is it to do with Chair Yellen's recent remarks that a rate increase might be a long way off? Seeming to signal that, at least?
Well, I'm not sure you could relate it to that. I mean, if anything, you would think that her reassurance that the committee would stay low for a long time would feed into inflation expectations and tend to drive them higher. So, you know, I think that, you know, I've already admitted that I think inflation has surprised me to the low side in the last year or longer. But I do think it'll come back to target. I do think it has bottomed out. It quit, you know, about 9 months ago, and inflation quit falling and sort of stabilized at this lower level. I think it's poised to head back up. And my best explanation for the low inflation experience is this global story about a global inflation factor that was sweeping inflation rates lower.
Why do you think the market...
Not just in the U.S., but across the world.
Sure, but why do you think the market is abandoning that bet?
I don't know. You have to ask those. You have to ask the traders and ask them what's behind that trade.
Well, you know, there is so much focus on inflation right now. Now, Jim, I want to come back to this because I have been thinking about this a lot. And again, you dissented against inflation on inflation, kind of like sticking up for inflation last summer.
Well, I still think it's important to defend the inflation target from the low side. I think that is an important aspect of what we do.
Well, but the Fed seems to be focusing much more on employment and moving away from that defense. It's tapering, and now the question is when you raise the first rate hike.
I don't really think so. So we got to the December meeting. If you looked at the data at the December meeting last year, we had growth running at about 3.5% in the second half of last year. It's since been revised down slightly, but So I thought we were in good shape for 2014. I still think we're in good shape for 2014. I think we got some soft data over the winter, but I think this is going to turn around. I think we'll be better for the rest of 2014. So I really think we do have a good story about, and inflation expectations are stable.
Right.
And so I do think we have a good story for inflation coming back to
Here,
target.
I've got an idea for the Fed, and maybe you guys have thought about this. The Fed had an unemployment threshold of 6.5%, and as it fell very quickly, it became clear it's just going to be made meaningless because we're going to get there and we're going to be below it and want to be above the threshold, right? So the Fed has now dropped that threshold and are looking at a variety of indicators. Maybe that's the same thing that needs to be done with inflation. There's so many measures. There's slack. There's capacity. Maybe the Fed could just step away from the specific number on inflation as it has with unemployment.
No, we have an inflation target. It's critical to have an inflation target to provide a nominal anchor for the economy. Once you name a target, you have to defend the target and take actions to defend the target. We have a very easy monetary policy, and I think we're in a good position to move inflation back to our target. So I think we're okay for now. Let me say this. If inflation takes another step down, that will put heavy pressure on the FOMC to take further action. And if we have to take further action, we have a clear card that we can play. We can delay the taper program.
So that would be in the cards, delaying the taper program. Just go back to the just stop and don't do any more taper or raise the amount of purchases again.
You could do either depending on the seriousness of the situation. But we have a card that we can play. It's very clear that we can do that if we need to. As I was describing earlier, you want to be very careful about doing that because we saw last summer how sensitive markets are and how powerful this tool is. So we want to be very careful if we're going to do that, that we're actually in a situation where we want to play that card.
Would it be fair to say that the dots would move too, including your dot on the funds rate in a case like that, where if inflation got that red flag waving for you?
That would change the entire timing of the exit program.
What kind of inflation would you be seeing? Would you be seeing a falling inflation, negative inflation to make you feel that way?
I think if inflation fell meaningfully below 1% and looked like it would stay there, then I think the committee would have to take action. That is a similar situation to what's happened to the ECB. And what we've seen in Europe is that that's put heavy pressure on the committee, and it's not clear what they're going to do, but they're certainly thinking about taking further action.
And the rest of the committee agrees with you?
I certainly do not speak for the committee. I speak for myself, but I'm describing how I would view the situation if inflation was lower. Yeah.
President Bullard, you were in Hong Kong last week. Did you learn anything about China's growth, Asia's growth that might be relevant to us here in the U.S. for monetary policy?
I listened carefully to my Asian contacts, and I was at two different conferences, one in Shanghai and one in Hong Kong. I would just summarize for your listeners that I did not hear any indications that there would be imminent collapse or crisis in China. Of course, one never knows, but I didn't really get the sort of on-the-ground story that there was going to be a big slowdown. So I expect continued growth there, perhaps at a little bit subdued rate from what they've been used to in recent years, but still they seem to be in pretty good shape in the near term. And that was the basic picture that I got out of my contacts in China. Of course, you hear a lot of different things, as we do in the media when we read about China, but that was my basic takeaway.
Emerging markets, you gave a very interesting talk where you kind of gave a nod to the concern in emerging markets that the Fed's policy has had has created volatility in their markets and economy.
Yeah, I think there are two views of this, and I tried to give one which is the traditional view and one which is a more maybe more radical view and less accepted in academia. The traditional view is that you have interacting economies, you have flexible exchange rates, you have free capital markets, and everyone has an independent monetary policy and they react to shocks in their own economy, and that system works beautifully and you have this nice equilibrium globally. However, in my own research, I've looked at the case where, let's suppose just one country or a small set of countries is not pursuing a good policy in their home country. What does that do to the global equilibrium? And the main result from that line of research is that the global equilibrium is no longer unique, which means lots of things can happen. You could get a lot of extra volatility. And why are you getting this volatility? It would be because one or more of the countries isn't following the optimal policy. So what you could interpret emerging markets as saying is that the U.S. probably is not pursuing the optimal policy. Of course, since I'm on the FOMC, I think we are. but you know, you could forgive them for saying that in this era of lots of experimental policy that they think it's not the optimal policy and that we are in this situation where there's extra volatility in the global equilibrium and that's hitting their economy. So that's not the mainstream view on this, but I think it gives some voice to their criticism.
You know, we haven't asked you for your most important forecast. Cardinals. St. Louis Cardinals.
Another great year for the Cardinals. back in the World Series, I think.
The Hayes Advantage. Weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014. Bloomberg LP.